But what we're going to see is that Ovadia is going to, in some way, shape, or form, be what's called an Avi Ha'amim, in the sense that he's going to address the particular nation of Edom. We're going to re-examine what it means to speak to another nation. And to a certain degree, he reminds us of Amos, who began with Al Shlosha Pashei Damasek, Al Shlosha Pashei Edom. And that seems to be the basic connection between Amos and Ovadia. But as we start with Ovadia, we're going to be a little disturbed by the interesting method that he's going to employ, which is to speak, on one hand, in second person to Edom, and at the same time, in third person. Now again, in Hebrew we call this Nochach, again, or Nistar. So when he's speaking, and I just want to have this serve as an introduction over here, when he's speaking in second person, our impression is that Edom is there, right in front of him. When he's speaking in third person, our impression is that they're not there. Again, and notice that this is a nevuah of only 22 psukim, the shortest of all, I don't want to say the shortest of all the nevi'im, in as much as the shortest of the nevuot, of the treasar that has been incorporated in the Tanakh. Again, and for whatever reason, Ovadia's other nevuot were not canonized. Is it clear that he gave other nevuot, by the way? Definitely. Once a Navi is a Navi, he continues to receive nevuot. Again, it doesn't mean that he'll have hundreds of nevuot, but he's a Navi till his dying day. And ultimately, again, we're then disturbed by the fact that within this one nevuah, he addresses them both as if they're there and as if they're not there. So the question is, what does it mean that he's talking to Edom? So one understanding that will also help us place this in chronological context, keep in mind that we have no ketovet nevuit, Chazon Ovadia, we have no idea who his father was, we have no idea where he's from, we have no idea when he's living, and therefore we're going to have to try to figure it out from the context.
Is he the same Ovadia as
Ovadia? Very nice, how do you know I was going to talk about this? So we're going to wait just 1 minute. Again, now trying to understand, if Edom is there, meaning if the reason he's talking to Edom in second person is because Edom is mamash there in front of him, then can anyone think of a time period where Edom would be in Yisrael, in Yerushalayim? He's going to make mention of Yerushalayim, giving us the impression that he's a Navi in Yehuda. We just said it, Mizmor Kuf Lamed Zayin. See how relevant our benching is? He said, do you remember, at the very end? Again, what did Edom do? Edom, again, Zohar Hashem, Livnei Edom, Ha'umrim Aru Aru Ad HaYisoda. Hashem, remember the Edomites, they were the ones to tell the Babylonians, at which time period? Korban Bayit Rishon. Again, Aru Aru. The Babylonians, just to remind you of their political philosophy, had nothing against the Jews retaining a temple. As a matter of fact, they take over the country in 605 BCE. Again, the temple isn't destroyed until 586 BCE. Keep in mind that's nearly 20 years later. Why didn't they destroy the temple initially, as opposed to the Romans who come in, and within 40 years the temple is destroyed? The reason is that ultimately the Babylonians didn't want to destroy people's cultures. Again, unlike even the Assyrians before them, whose political philosophy was really to go in and to dilute, again, the cultural norms of the people so that they'd be identified as Assyrian, very similar to Aryan culture, again, of the Germans. They wanted everyone to be Aryan. The Assyrians as well, not the Babylonians. The Babylonians wanted to create Babylonia in a very similar way that Shlomo created Yerushalayim, as the hubbub for the intellectuals, as the cultural center. And you see this ultimately in Galut Harashim Masger in 597 BCE, when he takes the aristocrats of Yerushalayim, he brings Yehudim, he brings again Ashurim, he brings again Moabites, again all to the areas of Babylonia to develop their culture there. Again, see Sefer Daniel, see Sefer Esther. Is there still a Yehudi populace in Babel? Yes. Again, he doesn't want to wipe out their cultural identity. So this is very interesting. And at that, when they first took over, they have nothing against the Jews having a temple. As a matter of fact, it actually seems to be in the benefit of Babylonia by virtue of the fact that the people should hopefully recognize, oh, they're allowing us to continue with our religious norms. Let's pay taxes to the Babylonians. But as you know, Yehoiakim and thereafter Tzidkiah are still going to rely on the powers of Egypt. That in mind, the Edomites were the one, according to this, who came in and said, again, they initially allied themselves with the Babylonians. And this is one of the ideas where Chazal say, again, Davar Yadua she'Esav Sonel Yaakov, that no matter what, throughout the generations, Esav always hates Yaakov. And how does this manifest itself? In allying themselves with whoever is Judea's enemy. And so they allied themselves with the Babylonians, and they're the ones who recommended to the Babylonians, Aru, Aru, don't just destroy it. Again, raise it to the ground, destroy it entirely. And the Babylonians basically listen to them. Within 15 years, they then go and conquer the Transjordan, destroying the Edomite kingdom. So back to this. One could argue that when Ovadia speaks to Edom in second person, he really is referring to the officers of Edom that are in Yerushalayim, that they're going through the marketplaces of Yerushalayim, because they're the officers in charge. In which case, where would we place Ovadia? During which time period in history? more or less, is a contemporary of Yirmiyahu, whom we already said maybe a contemporary of Yoel. And remember we spoke about how, or when you learn Yirmiyahu, your sense is, oh, Yirmiyahu is the only true Navi around. Is that true? No, again, he's the main Navi HaMelech. But there are other Naviim. Again, there's Uriah who's killed. Again, so it could be that Obadiah is speaking during the generation. If not, we already discussed, if you remember, by Hosea even, the idea of a Navi HaMim doesn't necessarily mean that he's addressing them directly. Rather, especially when he's speaking about them in third person, who is he really talking to? He's talking to Yehuda about Edom, right? About the powers of Edom. In which case, one has to then ask themselves, if he's only speaking to Yehuda about Edom, why does he speak to Edom sometimes in the second person? Again, as if they're present, as if they're there. Again, okay. So one could argue that this is just
a tool.
Very nice, stylistic. That's exactly it. That this is a device that he's employing, again, as if he's speaking directly to Babylonia, but really his audience are Judean. In which case, when would you place this historically? And at a time that obviously the Edomites are a threat, but maybe they're not necessarily there. Again, when would this be? Again, I could argue during Babylonian rule, or I could argue, I turn back to the time period of Ahab and Yehoshaphat. Again, I know that the Edomites are bothering them then as well. Again, and Yehuda wants to go to war against them. So, again, that would place us closer to the 8th century BCE. And up there, or really about 805 BCE. So, recognize all this, that it could be one of these time periods, and this is where, as Barak mentioned, Ibn Ezra says, again, maybe, he quotes the Midrash, again, the Midrash says, this Ovadia, the reason that there's no Ketuvit is because you know this Ovadia, who is this Ovadia? Turn back to Malachim Aleph Perek Yud Zayin, and you'll find out exactly who this Ovadia is. This Ovadia, we'll see, again, know where you know him from. Again, sorry, the beginning of Perek Yud Chet. Again, right after Eliyahu, not exactly right after, but Eliyahu has declared Al Tal v'Al Matar, again, no dew in the northern parts of Eretz Yisrael. He, in the meantime, is told, Hashem says, Rach Lecha, you go to the eastern side, then he goes to the north, to Lebanon, and he's provided miraculously by ravens and then by a widowed woman. And then Hashem tells him, the beginning of Perek Yud Chet, Vahi Yamim Rabim. Again, what are Yamim Rabim? You should know this from Halachim, Midrashi Halacha, very nice, three. Again, Yamim, the minimal plural is? Two. Again, Rabim, the minimal plural beyond two is?
Three.
Thank you. Again, Utzvah Hashem HaShar Yael B'Shana HaShlishit. Here's our proof, and this is where Chazal tell us anytime you find Yamim Rabim, it's always talking about three. So by the third year, even the northern kingdom, which generally is replete with various wadis, again, Mayanot Mayim, even they're suffering. And again, Hashem says, Lech Yireel, Achav Etzma Matar Pnei Adama. Eliyahu, go and have an audience with Achav, and then I'll bring water. But as you know, Eliyahu is the one who didn't want the water to begin with. So Eliyahu goes, Lehi Ra'ot El Achav. He is going to go to be seen in front of Achav, but he doesn't want to demean, again, himself, or belittle his appearance by appearing in front of Achav. V'arav chasak v'shamon, v'yikra Achav El Ovadiyahu asher al abayit. Ovadiyahu, even the name depicts that, what is his role? He's an Eved Hashem. And yet he is serving as the butler over Achav's house. And just know that he feared God. Sorry? Very nice. And this, by the way, is a clear contrast to Eliyahu. Eliyahu, who deserted the people and was provided miraculously and with water and food. Again, Ovadia, in the meantime, risks his life and does what? And he provides food for others. By the way, here's a shiurim that I give on, I call it debate versus diplomacy. That there are two ways of dealing with the government, when you don't like the government. One way of dealing with it is what? Siruf Kuda. What do I mean by that? You're all familiar? Siruf Kuda, what are we going to do? We don't know what Siruf Kuda is. They tell us to take out people from Gush Katif, and we refuse. Meaning we're just going to debate it. We're going to resist. We're going to not serve in the army. Right, is this really like before your time? No, it's only like 6 years ago. Right? You remember all this?
Yeah.
They should vote hysteria, decide they're not going to, a lot of people, whoa, we hate the Medina now, we're not going to serve in the army. So that's one way of dealing with things. I would say that's the Eliyahu way of dealing with things. And then there's the Ovadia way of dealing with things. What do I mean by that? No, go serve in the army, and then you can work with the government on these things. Right? That's called diplomacy. Right? That's Ovadia's method. Again, if you look, by the way, throughout Shas, you find that again, during the time of the Romans, there are machlokot. Again, I'm sure you know, Rav Chanina ben Tradion was which type of person? An Eliyahu person or an Ovadia person? Leo. Again, speaking against the Romans, he doesn't care about the Romans. Who did he debate against in this regard? Who said, no, you have to actually talk to the Romans. The Romans made him a big funeral. Hanina ben Tarajon didn't come. No. Rav Yosef ben Kisma. Right, again, now the two of them debate mamash this point. So again, just interesting to see how Talmudic characters continue the personalities of biblical characters, but that's another shiur. But again, back to this idea of Ovadia is working within. Achav has his priorities a little mixed up. Let's go see whether or not there's some straw, hay left in the land so that we can keep our animals alive. And he says, accuses him and says, I'm not your Adon. Achav is your Adon. And Ovadia says, I can't believe you're saying this. Mahatati, ki atanotena tatachav yadachav lahamitini. Again, don't do this to me. Obviously, when Achav says, where are you? You're going to disappear in the wind again, because that's what you do, Eliyahu. In other words, what's our impression of Ovadia? Are we supposed to like Ovadia?
Yeah.
Yes, he's Nevi Hashem. So much so that if you look at the beginning of the stories of Elisha and Malachim Bet, if you turn again and you remember that you read Perek Dalid, this is very interesting. You read Perek Dalid as the Haftorah for Gena for Parshat Vayera, right? And what's interesting is that many people say the reason you read Perek Dalid is because starting Pasuk Chet, we have the story of the Isha Shunamit, who doesn't have a child, and Elisha grants her a child, and then the child dies, and Elisha brings the child back to life. And if you think of an association with Parshat Vayera, what do you think of? The Akedah, right? The Akedah Tzitzchak. But if you look carefully, again, it's strange. We don't start the Haftorah in Pasuk Chet, we start in Pasuk Aleph. How does it begin? V'isha achat minishei b'nei ha-nevi'im. There was a woman who was a wife of one of the b'nei nevi'im whom Elisha takes care of. Tzaka l'Elisha lemor, avdacha ishi met. And your Eved died, and you know that he was a Yirei Hashem. But in the meantime, and the Noshe, and the lender, or basically the creditor, has come to collect our loan, and I don't have anything to pay him back, and he wants to take my two children as slaves for the government. Again, the Parshanim explained that this is part of the atrocity of the Achavi Zebel dynasty, right? That they took children, again, to pay back for government loans that weren't paid back. In any case, again, what is this idea? So I'll just tell you, it's a beautiful idea. Beginning the Haftorah with an idea of, again, Elisha saves them. She has her two children because her husband was a Yirei Hashem. The next story is Isha Shunamit. But why is she granted a child? Not because of Yirei Hashem, but why does Elisha grant the Isha Shunamit a child? Because Isha Shunamit takes care of him. And again, because of her Gemilut Chasadim, what is the message that Chazal are giving you? And if you look at Parshat Vayera, there are two explanations for why Avram gets a child. The beginning of Vayera begins with this Achnasat Orchim of the Malachim. And one of the Malachim told him he's going to have a child. But if I look at the end of Parshat Lech Lecha, he already knows that he's going to have a child named Yitzchak. Isn't that weird? So again, you're supposed to understand that one reason Avram has a child is because of his Yiret Hashem. The other reason Avram Sarah granted a child is because of their Gemilut Chasid. Isn't that beautiful? Again, both Ben Adam Lachem, Ben Adam Lachavero. Okay, back to this then. You're saying, what in the world does this have to do with the Nebuah of Ovadia? So I'll tell you. So Chazal say that who is this Navi, again, whose wife, the widow, screams to Elisha and says, Avdacha met, v'haya yareyat Hashem od, and he was a yareyat Hashem. What do you know? So the Parshanim say, Eved yareyat Hashem, he must be Ovadia, right? We call this the conservation of personality. Isn't necessarily Ovadia? I don't know, but living during the same time period, it could be Ovadia. So this is where Ibn Ezra quotes the Medrash that tells us that our Ovadia in Treyasar, Gena, has the same name, and we don't know anything else about him, so he must be the same Ovadia. How do you like that? You're supposed to say you don't. Why? So Ibn Ezra says, we have no proof. That doesn't make any sense, that this is an Ovadia. Who's that Ovadia? He says, why not? Because if you look at this Ovadia, it seems that he's coming from Yehuda. That Ovadia was the butler in Achav's court. So it doesn't seem to be the same Ovadia. I can argue, though, that he does have a similar personality. Ibn Ezra argues beautifully, by the way. He says, really, if this Ovadia, the Navi, was the Ovadia, Haya Yireyat Hashem, he says, what should it have said in Perek Yudchet? How did it describe Ovadia? Ovadia, Sher Halabayit, Haya Yareyat Hashem Ma'od. Says, if he was a Navi, what would the Navi have done? He would have described Ovadia as Ovadia, Sher Halabayit, Vahaya Navi Hashem. Because a Navi, in order to be a Navi, do you need Yirat Hashem? Yeah, so again, think about this logic. Ibn Ezra says something brilliant. He says, if he was a Nabi, it would be belittling to just call him a Yirei Hashem. Whereas, if he was a Nabi, you would know that he's also a Yirei Hashem. That makes a lot of sense. Again, so one can still argue. Again, in Malachim Bet, Perek Daleh, there it does call him one of the B'nai Nevi'im, but it doesn't mention Ovadia by name. You all see how difficult this is? Whatever the case, do I have to understand that this Ovadia is the same Ovadia in the stories of Eliyahu? Absolutely not. So I still don't really know who he is. And that was the whole point of that introduction. Chazon Ovadia, Komar Hashem Elokim, Le'edom, Shmu'a Shemanu Me'it Hashem. Okay, now this is obviously also a little bit sarcastic. Ovadia says, as if he's talking to Edom, and we said this can mean that he's talking directly to Edom, this can mean that he's talking about Edom to Yisrael, which means that it's really for Yisrael, or that it's for both, that Edom is going to hear this nebuah. We heard a rumor from Hashem, v'tzir bagoyim shulach, and again, a message was sent amongst the goyim, kumo v'nakuma alah l'milchama. And let's go, and start to, again, to wage war against Edom. Again, meaning we hear a rumor, Edom, that soon you're going to be lost. Now, the truth is that this fits in very nicely, placing Edom during the Babylonian era, because Edom thinks, oh, we're the Babylonians' ally. Everything is going to be okay. Within just 15 years after Churban HaBayit, Edom was completely destroyed. So we heard that you're going to be attacked, Hine katoni taticha bagoyim, because you've always been the smallest amongst the goyim. And isn't this interesting? The first time you hear about Edom is when?
Remember?
Nope.
No.
This is very interesting. You know, throughout the Sefer HaToladot, what Sefer am I referring to? Sefer Breshit. You always find the Toladot, Toladot. Gena, Anna, I'm sure you're familiar with Nivchar Nitche, right? You always have the Toladot, Shenitchu, the rejected Toladot, and then the selected Toladot, right? Rav Lifshak? Gena, so ultimately, you have, let's say, the Toldot of Yishmael in six Pesukim, and then you have the Toldot of Yitzchak. You have the Toldot of, now this is very, very interesting. Then I'm waiting to hear the Toldot of Esav to be rejected. So I have the Toldot of Esav. And then it talks about the Toldot of Sarai Esav. And then the Toldot of Malchei Esav. And then the Toldot of Edom. Right? Telling you that the Toldot of Esav, even though they're rejected, they're a nice rejection. What do I mean by that? As opposed to Yishmael, what ends up happening to the Yishmaelites? They turned into these nomadic people that are always traveling in which area?
Desert.
Again, throughout the desert, throughout the eastern desert down to Mitzrayim, right? Do they ever become a nation? No, you don't call them Am HaYishmaelim. Isn't that weird? Because in order to be an Am, you need... Thank you. Again, so you never have the Ishmaelites. As opposed to that, Esav, does Esav become a nation? Yes, we call them the nation of Edom, right? And they have the area of Har Seir, again, on the Transjordan. So they make themselves into something. Hannah, but what's interesting is that they never make it into a real malchut. What do I mean by that? Even though they're introduced as Malchei Edom back in Parshat Toldot, and then you have Eilat Toldot Yaakov Yosef. Right? But I have three paragraphs, three parshiot that talk about the establishment of Esav. And the parshanim explain that this is to show you that the bracha of Yitzchak to Esav came true as well. Gana, the idea of Alchar Bechatachia. What do you know? And yet, if I look throughout history, I see that Aram reached empire heights. I see that, again, Ashur, certainly, again, the Babylonians, the Greeks, the Romans, but never the Edomites. So this is what Ovadia is referring to. You know, it's very nice that you have your own piece of land, but you never put it into something. You're always an underdog. Again, you were always very mocked. No one likes to hear this, by the way. Not good for self-confidence. Zidon lebcha hishiacha. Says, why? Because what leads you is not necessarily the desire for power, is not even for control. What leads you, again, is a personal vendetta. And because it's a personal vendetta, of course you're never going to reach heights. Shochnei b'chag v'sela, merom shivto, omer b'libo, miyaridini aretz. It's all about your honor. Because you're like one who sits in, again, in the crevices of the rock, and you place yourself high up, not because you're really strong, but because you're haughty. And you think, who's going to ever take me down? So if you, again, fly up high like the vulture, we just saw these chicken, by the way, at the end of Amos, do you remember? Again, so just because you're on high, that doesn't mean you're strong. Hashem can take you down in a flash. Again, and just to prove it, you are so scared, even of your own shadow. So if thieves come, bandits of the night come, oh, you'd be so silent. People would take whatever they wanted. If people came, they would steal everything from your vineyard, labriot. Again, they would leave nothing. They would leave the tiny rotten grapes for you. how Esav is so exposed, meaning this is an open mockery of the nation, right? That look at you. Again, you nevu matpuna, we use matpun to also mean like an open conscience, but matpun means anything that's hidden. Again, how exposed are all your hidden treasures. Ad hagvul shulchucha kol anshei britacha, all of your allies are going to cast you to your border. Yishi'ucha yachlulcha anshei shlomecha. Again, those who you think are your allies anshei shlomecha, they're going to carry you away. They are going to arrange for a mazor, it's like a mazor, again, a siege against you. And you're not going to know what to do. And that's when all your smart people are going to be lost. And then all of, again, your strongholds all the way down south are going to be destroyed. You should be embarrassed. Why is this all happening to you? It's because of the injustice that you have showed for your brother Yaakov. Now, obviously, when we talk about it, we're going to go back to the roots of this relationship, which is the animosity between Yaakov and Esav, or Esav and Yaakov. You should be ashamed of yourself. You know why you never reached these heights? It's because of this personal vendetta. Again, and that's why, in the end, you are really such a weakling, is what the Navi is telling him. Notice, by the way, Anna's Huf Sheni. This is all as if Edom is there. And he's saying, it's because you hated Yaakov. You should be ashamed of yourself. Again, ashamed of the sibling rivalry. And therefore, God is casting you off forever. This is where the Radak says, again, that many people claim that Rome came from where? From Edom. Right? And how could this be? Because I just mentioned that the Babylonians took not only Jews, but the Babylonians took and all the different nations and placed them in Babylonia to build up their culture. So the Radak says that there is a possibility that Titus, the king of Rome, again, was actually an Edomite, right? That they came there, and then they went after Koresh allows for all those who were exiled by the Babylonians to establish autonomy in their lands. So the Edomites, who were taken from the southeastern area of Edom, decided instead of going back to the southeast, they're going to go to the northeast and to the northwest, and that's when they built up the Roman Empire. That's very nice. But for all intents and purposes, during the same time that Yerushalayim is destroyed, again, and Yehuda is going to be exiled, Edom is destroyed forever. During Vayechani, do we have any Edomites? No, we have what are called Edumim. Don't confuse them with Edomim. We have Edumim who are Edomites. Did you ever hear this during the time of the Hashmonaim? Excellent. You know your Jewish history. Kol HaKavod. Gana, they were the ones who went to, sorry? During Herod's time. Excellent. Herod was, well, thank you, was an Edomite. Again, that doesn't mean he was from Harei Edom. Is that okay? It means that this was a sect, again, that actually came from the northeastern parts, according to some. Again, they had age-old tensions with the Pythonians who lived during this time. Again, and basically we never hear of Edom again, and this is exactly what the Navi is saying. Because on the day that you stood against him, and this seems to be a good support for the fact that he's talking more or less during the time of Yirmiyahu, on the day that you yourself stripped Yehuda of his strength, and this is our proof that Obadiah is from the area of Yehuda and Yerushalayim. On the day that you allowed for strangers, not that you were the ones, but you just sat there, stood there, encouraged the strangers to come in through the gates, Bi'al Yerushalayim Yadu Goral, and they started destroying Yerushalayim, Gamata Ke'achad Mihem. You made yourselves one of the enemies. Bi'al Tereh B'yom Machacha B'yom Nachro. Shame on you! You should not have been looking at your brother on the day that he was estranged. This is just too difficult. Again, this is too horrific. You've all read Cain and Abel? Excellent. Again, v'al tesmach levnei Yehuda b'yom avdan. And you shouldn't have been happy, again, when you saw Yehuda being lost. So, by the way, biblical critics love to say that when was Obadiah obviously written? Vayecheni. Again, when the Nevi is writing post facto. But I could argue, no, he's writing this mamish during, again, the initial Babylonian invasion, when Edom allies themselves against our enemy. Shame on you, Alta del Picha Biom Tzara. You should not have opened your mouth on the day of their suffering. Alta vo b'sharami biom edam. Shame on you for coming to the sharami. Alta vo doesn't mean do not come. It means shame on you for coming. B'sharami biom edam. Alta ragamata b'ra'ato biom edo. Again, you should not be there to see the evil when it befalls him. The alta shlachna b'chilo biom edo. You should not be affecting the strength. And shame on you for standing on the border. Remember we discussed this in Amos? How the atrocity of Edom was that they stood on the borders and they handed over all those who tried to escape the Babylonians. They basically gave them on a silver platter for the Babylonians to torture and kill. Not only that, but we saw how our western border neighbors, namely the Plishtim, would hand over all those who were escaping. Remember we said across the Mexican Plishtim border? Again, they would hand them over to Edom because they knew that the Edomites were the ones who were going to take care of them. So shame on you for standing on the border, l'achrita plitav, to destroy all those who were trying to run away. And shame on you for handing over whoever, those remnants, those few who managed to run away from the Babylonian enemies, you gave them over. Mita keneged mita, this is one of the classic psukim. Whatever you did is going to happen to you. Molcha yashuv roshecha. It's going to be payback time. Ki kasher shititem al har kachi, this is also a very famous imagery that you find almost every Nevi incorporates, the idea of intoxicating oneself with wine. Again, as a way of also showing that God is going to inundate you with punishment. So the way that you drank on Har HaKodesh out of happiness, Yishtu Kol HaGoyim Tamid. That's how the Goyim are going to drink, basically. They're going to, again, to drink out of happiness over your fall. Vishatu Vila'u. This is also a beautiful play on words. Please remember that this is all semantics. Vishatu Vila'u. And they drink, and la'u means they fill themselves up with wine. V'hayu kilo hayu. Isn't that cute? Again, la'u with an ayin, lo hayu. Get it? And it's as if they never were. Meaning, that's how your enemies are also going to drink up, as if you never existed. Notice what happens in Pasuk Yitzayim. All of a sudden, we shifted from Nochach to Nistar. He was talking Gushini, again, Kikasher Shititim. Now he's talking Be'ershu Beit Yaakov et Morashehem. Everyone see this difference? And as sophisticated readers of Nebuah, you should recognize this is such a weird method that he's employing here. Again, he's switching over. So is he doing this just as Liat said, as a tactic of Nebuah, talking to Edom as if they're there, but they're not there? Or maybe he was talking to them. I want you to picture this. There are Edomite officers. Again, almost like, picture like British officers during colonial times. Again, we're talking about Revolutionary War. So I can be talking to the British officers and the Tories, right, while at the same time, I then turn and talk to, again, the colonists, right? Do you see this? Okay.
Say what, after they were destroyed, so maybe he's like talking to them as if...
Very nice. So maybe they're really there. And yafe ma'od. And now he's talking in third person just to show that it's as if you don't exist anymore. Yafe ma'od. Again, and then Yehuda will go ahead and... Again, those who run to Har Tzion will escape, and Beit Yaakov is going to inherit their lands. Who are their lands? Et Morashehim. We're going to see right now. Again, the whole area of Har-Esav, Har-Seir, Beit Yaakov, Beit Yosef, Lahava, Yaakov and Yosef will turn to, again, this is where we saw that anytime you see Yaakov, it's primarily Yehuda, and Ephraim is a nickname for Yosef, Beit Yosef, Lahava, Beit Esav, Lakash. So Yisrael is going to be the fire, and Esav is going to be the straw. There isn't going to be any remainder for Esav. Then we're going to go and we're going to inherit the southern areas of the southeastern parts of Eretz Yisrael. Again, by the way, this is interesting. Which areas are these? Like Petra down south, right? The areas which, amazingly, if you know, these are the areas that King Hussein of Jordan in 1991 established a peace treaty with, right, that we gave him the salt works. Remember this? And we're allowed to use the Gulf of Aqaba with him, which is funny because it really belongs to us, but it's okay. Again, that we're going to have somewhat of control in this area. And now we're also going to go to the southwest and inherit the lands of the Plishtim. And again, Ephraim and Shamron and even Binyamin will go all the way up to the Gilad. It's talking about the expansion of the borders of Israel. Tzarfat, by the way, is not France. It is part of Lebanon, right? Like the Isha Tzarfati. Do you know this? Tzfarad is not Spain as you and I know it, but again, the areas of Edom. Isn't that interesting? Again, Milashon Sfar, like the Sfar of the Midbar, the part of the Midbar. Yeshua Tarei HaNegev, Galum Moshim Bahar Tzion. And ultimately, where will the government be established? Even though we're going to expand our borders to the north, all the way to the Lebanon, to the west, all the way to the Plishtim, to the east, all the way to Edom. And we're going to establish our government, Bahar Tzion, Lishpot at Haresav. Notice the two geographical areas, almost as if they're at odds forever, one against the other. But ultimately, in this contest between Har Tzion and Har Esav, who's going to win? Baita Lahashem. But ultimately, when we talk about the seat of government being on Har Zion, we mean that this is going to be the place where the kingship of God will be manifest, and that's the reason why Edom is going to fall, because they don't truly recognize this kingship of God. So Obadiah, even though a very short nevuah, really, again, very concise, but a very strong nevuah against Edom, talking about the ultimate fate of them as being destroyed, and obviously the supremacy of Yehuda, not because of our strength, but because of our humility, again, in recognizing that Hashem ultimately rules not only nationally, again, but obviously international events as well. With this, I hope you're all ready for our very interesting Yonah. Again, I would like you, just before tomorrow, to look over Yonah, since last Haftorah of Yom HaKippurim. Is that okay? And I want you to think for yourselves, is this a realistic story or a surrealistic story? Again, are we supposed to understand this on a literal term, figurative term? And then we're going to see there isn't such a nafkamina, but I want you to bring support for, on one hand, the Rambam. The Rambam says, did this story ever happen? No. Again, according to the Barbanel, did this happen?
Yes.
Of course. Yes. So stay tuned for tomorrow. We're going to see super duper structure in Yonah. What do I mean by that? You're also supposed to say, obviously, chiastic, again. So you're going to have Aleph, Dalet, Bet, Gimel relating to each other. But you ready for this? Again, Aleph and Bet relate to each other. Bet and Dalet relate to each other. Bet and Gimel relate to each other. Gimel and Dalet relate to each other. It's chiastic, so obviously Aleph and Dalet relate to each other. Again, you're going to see, again, what's called inter and intra chiasm. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So stay tuned. Okay, have a great day. Yashar Koach on the Menachot, and enjoy life for you.
Thank you.
Esimcha. And yes, you do have.